All right, guys, welcome. Today is a pretty cool day. So I've got a good friend of mine, Fabrice Lapierre, online with us today. Fabrice has had a long career as a professional athlete, specifically as a long jumper. And I've been following his career, obviously, the whole time through, but it's really cool for me to get an opportunity to chat to him about it and go a little bit deeper into some of the stuff that went on in his career. So firstly, Fab, welcome.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
No worries, man. We're excited to have you. So Fab, let's get straight into it. You've had a long career. I'm going to touch on some of the things, some of the highlights that were part of your career as we go through. But I think it all started with everyone back in Little Athletics days as a junior. Now I've told you this story before, but I remember running into you because I used to do a bit of athletics as a youngster, and I ran into you maybe when I was, I want to say 15, so probably just before you got really, really good. And I remember we competed against each other in 100 meters. There was a guy that we were running with named Walter McGagna. So shout out if he's listening. Dude had the worst mullet of all time. But that's where I first sort of knew who you were. And then obviously you didn't know who I was because I was finishing down the back. But then obviously we met in 2002. Through a friend, and from there we've been friends. So tell me about your junior athletics. Like, how did you get into it, and sort of why did you enjoy athletics as a youngster?
Yeah, I mean, I was always into sports as a youngster. You know, I played soccer and I did athletics. Those two big ones that I always did. I was always into it, you know, soccer during the winter and then athletics during the summer type period. I don't know, it was fun. I was good with it, I guess. But I just had a lot of friends there as well. Like, as you know, we had mutual friends in athletics. So that was the main thing. And then I just kept doing it. I wasn't necessarily the greatest young athlete. I just kind of developed into it from probably 15 onwards, I think. I just really developed and became a better athlete. And I just stuck with it and enjoyed it.
So what was the – do you remember the first sort of time – that you realized that you were actually quite good? Like, was there an event that you won, or was there a sort of a time that you ran or anything?
Yeah, I think the turning point for me, I think I was in, I want to say I was in year 11. And it was, that's what it was. It was Olympic Games just done. So it was, the year was 2000, and we had just done Olympic Games, and I went to watch it. I was actually working there, a volunteer. So I was in the stadium the whole time, every day. So I got inspired by Olympic Games after watching that. And then literally 2 months later, we had our Australian Championships. And I just kind of like out of nowhere just improved my 200-meter time by 2 seconds. I was never a 200-meter runner. I won the 200 meters. I broke the Australian record out of nowhere. Everyone was like, where did this guy come from? And then I just got all this speed out of the blue. I won the long jump. I won the 200. I think I got second or third in 100. I did a triple jump, did all these events. I just kind of dominated it. And I knew then, I was like, you know what? I might be pretty good at this. I might have a shot of making Olympics one day.
That's cool. That's awesome. And obviously, so from there, so between that's like year 2000, you ended up moving to America in 2003. So in that 3 year period, how did you transition? So when you went to America originally, just to go ahead for 1 second, you went over as a long jumper, is that correct?
I went over as a sprinter and jumper.
Okay, cool. So you hadn't quite specialized yet?
Not yet.
All right, awesome. So in that 3 year period, did you continue to improve and continue to sort of dedicate yourself a little bit more and therefore get better results and sort of continue to win Australian championships, et cetera?
Yeah, I think initially after getting all the results in 2000, or I think it was the end of 2000, 2001, I think I might have got to my head a little bit and I probably took my foot off the pedal, and there was probably a period about 6 months where I kind of like didn't improve just because I didn't work hard. I probably thought I was going to go places without actually working hard. Mm-hmm. Then I kind of realized, you know what, I've got to work at this, and which I did for about a year. And I improved, and I was able to make the World Junior Championships in Jamaica, it was, in 2002. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, I knew I wanted to go to Olympics one day. But more importantly, I knew that to develop, I would need to probably go overseas to like America.
Mm.
And I used the opportunity of World Juniors to do my best and hopefully get recruited to go to America, which is eventually what happened.
Yeah, cool. So let's go to that then. So you moved to America. Now, why did you move to America? Why did you not, why didn't you stay? Like, obviously, at your age there, you would have been 19, 20. It's quite a big move to move to the other side of the world by yourself. So why did you think it was important to move to America as opposed to just staying here and continuing to try and develop in Australia?
Well, number one, it was a dream of mine always to go there in the first place. But number two, you know, I just knew there was a lot more coaches and facilities and just opportunity over there to get better. Like, I thought my options were limited in Sydney. I had my high school coach. And other than that, there wasn't really a coach that I could go to in Sydney where I could develop, I thought. There was the AIS option. But when I thought about it, it was like, you know, go live in Canberra or go to America. Yeah. And you know, I'm only 19 or 18 at the time. So, you know, I'm going to choose America. So that's what I did. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it ended up being a good decision, but you've lived there ever since. So you are coming to us today from America. So one day, hopefully we're going to get you back, but
yes.
Talk me through getting to America. You're now, you know, you've got some aspirations to make the Olympics. You're looking to improve. Sort of what happened in the first sort of year or so? Like, how did you settle in? Did you find it difficult or did you sort of just jump straight in and loved every second of it?
Yeah, I mean, I jumped straight in and loved every second of it right off the bat. And I think it was a bit too enjoyable at the start. That first year, I loved it. And I actually, you know, there's a thing that they say in America, the freshman 15. Is where you're getting 15 pounds in the first semester.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what that is in kilos, but it happened to me. So I gained all this weight right off the bat, first 5 months. But yeah, I didn't necessarily have the best first year in college. I did all right, don't get me wrong, but I didn't get a P. I didn't improve as far as getting a personal best.
Okay. Well, so obviously something happened though, because eventually, and I'm going to touch on it in a sec, you ended up having an excellent career and won a lot of events as a long jumper. So you go over there, you're a sprinter and a long jumper. I mean, I don't know what your 200 time is, but it's under 22 seconds. I know your best 100 is like around 10.5 seconds. So pretty quick, but obviously not quick enough to really make a career of it at that level anyway. So what is that? Is that why you went to long jump, or did you sort of stop working on your sprinting to do the long jump?
No, I mean, I think deep down, I always knew at that point, once I went to America, I knew that if I was going to make the Olympics, it was going to be in long jump. I mean, I knew I was never going to break 10. At least I didn't think I was going to break 10 seconds. But I knew I was a pretty good jumper. I could always jump higher than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a matter of using the speed that I had to be able to jump properly, because I didn't have the best technique back then.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was an adjustment. I went over, the first year was a lot of fun. Second year, I must admit, I actually got homesick and actually I still wasn't improving. I did a personal best, but it was a win-aided personal best. So technically my legal best still hadn't gotten better yet. And I was kind of getting frustrated and, I thought I'd come back home. I told my mum and dad I want to come back home. And I thought I was. I actually didn't go to class the last part of the semester and got really bad grades that year. But, you know, mum and dad told me that I should finish what I started. So that was a good decision that I think that was a whole turning point where I went back more focused and dedicated after that.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. And obviously, as your career went on, you got some good results and that sort of feeds into momentum too. So I've been hinting at it. I'm going to run through some of your highlights. Let's just get it out there to the people about what you've done. And then we can talk a bit more in depth about sort of maybe some individual events or some highlights and stuff. So long jump, your best jump legally is 8.40. Best jump illegally or wind assisted is 8.78. That's not to say you fouled. It was just the wind was too strong that day for it to be a legal, what they call a legal jump. And at the point when you got the 878, that was the longest jump ever legal or wind assisted since the world record. So massive, massive jump at the time. 8.78 is absolutely incredible. You went to 2 Olympic Games, 4 Commonwealth Games with your best result in the Comm Games, a gold medal in Delhi 2010, also a bronze medal in Melbourne 2006, which I was at, which was a very, very cool weekend. 5 World Championships, best result, second place, incredible. And you also have won the World Indoor Championship. So in amongst that, a lot of different wins in the Diamond League, etc., through Europe. So massive career. When you hear all that, is that like, as an 18-year-old, if I'd have told you today that that's what your career would end up, do you think you would have been satisfied? Do you think that's sort of everything you wanted to do, even more? Or did you potentially, was there something you wanted to do that wasn't on that list?
No, I mean, as an 18-year-old, like, I was always pretty confident in my abilities. So if you told me that, I would have probably agreed with you. But I would have probably thought, you know, I probably should have won a lot more things.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I would have loved that. But, yeah, I was pretty confident at 18 with my capabilities. So, but, yeah, I would never have complained with that.
All right, cool. Yeah, no, I think it's something you hear a lot with athletes is confidence. Like, very rarely, and it does happen, but very rarely do you hear somebody that's had a really great professional athletic career who wasn't confident as a youngster. So I think that's in line with a lot of things I've heard before. Now, let's talk about a highlight. Maybe it's hard to narrow it down to one, but is there one or two jumps in particular, or one or two events or like meets that you just think that was like one of the best jumps I've ever done, or one of the best sort of meets I've ever had?
So memory that pops to mind for me, it's not like a major competition or anything. Well, it's not. It was a college competition. But, like, my parents had flown to America for the first time to watch me compete. And it was for the national championships, mm-hmm. the NCAA championships. And that was my junior year, which is my third year. And I won it. And I went from, I think it was 7th to 1st on my last jump.
Wow.
So it was the very last round. I think I was in 7th place. But, you know, I knew I was better than that. And my parents flown all the way. My mum started to clap. In the crowd, mom started to, I could hear a voice. I just heard start, you know, the cold crowd claps, and I ran out there and I jumped 8:15 it was, and ended up winning it. But that just stands out for me because I think it was like just a great moment. Had my parents out there and family, and I think it was a moment that I realized I can do this professionally as well now. Like my first big victory against internationals.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, like you said, you struggled maybe at first or you enjoyed it a little too much, but then sort of got a bit homesick. But then to go back and third year in, have your parents come over, it would have been a really special moment. So that's a good one. I mean, when I think about, you know, I wanted to touch on the actual events now. Like when we talk about the Olympic Games, you think, I mean, everyone knows what the Olympics are. And the idea of actually going to an Olympic Games, I think for anyone would be an absolute pinnacle. And for someone with aspirations of getting actually physically being able to make the Olympics and then actually going to an Olympic Games. Like, what was it like to make your first Olympic Games team? And how did the experience match up to what you thought it would be like?
It was better than I expected. I remember I was super excited when I made it, you know, as you would be. But, you know, it didn't hit me, I think, till the day of competition. I remember we had gone through the core room and stuff and all that. And we start walking down the tunnel. And as I walk out in the stadium, I actually started crying.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if that was probably a rookie move at the time, but like, I was just like so overwhelmed, you know. I was like, well, like, I'm actually out here, you know.
Yeah.
The crowd was loud. I just saw the Olympic flame. I saw all that stuff. And I just remember 2000 wishing I could be there. And here I am now, you know. So I was kind of like overwhelmed with emotion at the time. But that's when I realized, well, I'm really here.
Yeah, that's sick. That's awesome. And you've had some really good results in big competitions. Like, you've won the Commonwealth Games. You've also got a medal. You've come second in the World Championships. You've won the World Indoors. Like, talk to me about, like you said, you sort of got overwhelmed a little bit with emotion walking out to your first Olympics. But once you're actually out there and you're warming up, what's it like, or what is your process with trying to get back into the moment? So obviously you don't want to be too emotional and you want to sort of focus on the things you're there to do. So how did you, as you got further into your career, were there any things that you did to specifically try and get yourself back into the moment and focused on what you should be focused on?
Yeah, so that obviously that first Olympics was my second year as a professional. it just taught me to be aware of my surroundings, kind of thing. Like, just be aware of the crowd, the track, all the thing that's everything else, like other competitors competing around the, you know, 1500 meters or whatever event they're doing. There's just so much going on and so much distraction going on out there on track. So if you don't block all that out and concentrate on what you have to do, it can get kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
There literally is so much going on. So what I found out was, I just kind of like, almost like, you got blinkers on, you just focused on one thing. You don't really see anything else. You just kind of block everything out and just focus. And I was able to do that, I think, after that my first Olympics, and it really helped me out for the rest of my career.
Yeah. So I remember watching you on TV jump plenty, and also a couple of times in real life. And it seems to me like you're pretty quiet and pretty chilled and pretty to yourself. Yeah. And I mean, you know, knowing you personally as well, that's pretty reflective of what you're actually like as well. But sort of when you get up there and you're ready to jump, to me, it seems like something sort of switches over. And there's a little bit of like, not aggression, but a little bit of like, I don't know, something comes out of you and you seem a lot more sort of really on the moment, really intense with what you're about to do. And is that a conscious thing that you're doing, or is that sort of just happen as soon as you get up and you're ready to jump?
Well, I think like in everyday life, like if I'm walking down the street, I'm not just going to yell for no reason. It's kind of like weird. But like when I'm out there, like for that moment, I feel like I'm the only person in the stadium.
Yeah.
And that no one can hear me. That's awesome. So it's a weird feeling. So I'm just there, and like I just feel like I can yell as loud as I want, do whatever I want, and no one can, you know, I could almost be naked out there and no one can see me.
Yeah, cool.
You know, that's what you're feeling.
And it seems to me like long jumpers particularly really like to get a bit of, and I guess the high jumpers are similar. So I'm not sure what it is about those events, but they really like the crowd interaction, though, with the long, slow claps. And is that something that you enjoyed your whole career, or is something you sort of you got used to and therefore you sort of fed off the crowd energy? You hear a lot of professional, like football players and stuff, say they really feel like playing at home, they get a big advantage with the crowd support. Do you feel like getting the crowd involvement helped you, or was it something you weren't that particularly interested in?
No, I was always into it. You know, I've heard some people aren't into it, but I think it depends on the person. But it's just all the things that you're feeling at the moment. Like, you're already pretty pumped at the time. Your heart's going, you know, a million miles an hour. And I found that the more your heart's going a million miles an hour, the better you feel. And that rhythm of the crowd, it just really gets you going. It just really gets you going and hyped. And I think it's really important, and it does help.
The other thing I always thought interesting about watching you jump was when you are standing against or around the other long jumpers, they all seem to have a very similar sort of body shape. They're all quite tall. They're all, a lot of them, I wouldn't say are thick, but they're fairly solid dudes. And many, I guess, of the best jumpers going around at the moment and back in the day sort of had that build. But your build is very different to that. You're a lot short. I mean, you're taller than me, of course, but you're shorter than most of them. Slighter than most of them. So what do you think, like, it's pretty unusual to have someone of your build be that elite at long jumping. What do you think it was about the way you jumped or your personal attributes that allowed you to compete with and beat guys that are a lot different body shape to you?
Yeah, so I mean, I was pretty, you got to be pretty fast to the long jump anyway, which I was pretty fast. But the thing that made me different was my elasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just real springy and elastic, super elastic, probably the most elastic guy out there. So I was able to just generate a whole bunch of power from the board. And with my elasticity, I was just able to just pop off the board and fly. So that was my attribute that I had that I guess not everyone else did.
Yeah, it's really obvious when you watch you jump, actually. You go a lot higher, it seems, to it than everyone else. Do you were you any good at high jump growing up?
I was all right, but I was always more of a long high jumper, so to speak, if that makes sense. Like, I would jump high but far. Like, I remember one time I did the high jump and I jumped off the entire mat on the grass. You know?
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I mean, I was all right, but I wasn't nothing special at high jump. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's crazy because you do jump, like, you jump really, really high as a long jumper. So the other thing I was always wondering is when you're in the air, so say you've even in training, you obviously do it all the time, but I've paced out 8 meters and I've measured it up and look, had a good look. I've done it a few times actually. It's a bloody long way. Yeah. When you're in the air, do you feel yourself traveling that far, or is it sort of just over in a blur and it's sort of done? Or are you thinking when you're in the air about how to finish the jump off? Like what's sort of going? It seems like it's such a long way that you do have time to think.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's weird. Like I might jump 7 meters 80, something like that. Just 20 centimeters below 8 meters, and it kind of feels like it's over in a flash. But then all of a sudden you jump, I don't know, 40 centimeters more, and it feels like you're in there for a long time.
Right.
That little bit, but it makes a big difference. You know, there are times that I've jumped 8, 20 plus, and I feel like I'm in the air for a while. I feel like all the rotations of my body. So it's a weird one. Like, it's like, yes, there are times I just jump and literally feel like I just do it real quick and land. And then other ones, when you do it right, you do feel like they're there for a while.
Cool. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've always wondered. It's just such a long way. It's just interesting to hear what it's like to be in. I'd love to know what it's like to be in the air for that long. Unfortunately, I think my best is about 3 meters, so I'm not going to find that out. Great question about your career. So you started off with a bang and you had a good, like you said, that memory you had of winning the Nationals in America. And then you went on and you got a bronze in Commonwealth Games. You won the Commonwealth Games 4 years later, 2010. And then it seems like your career sort of petered out a little bit and you probably weren't performing as well as you did. But then, say, 15, 16, it looks like your results and your finishes in big competitions got a lot better again.
Yeah.
What happened in that little period? Like, what would you say is the reason that maybe you didn't jump so well and then you started jumping well again after that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was doing great from the years 2008 to 2010. 2011 to 2014, I kind of like stagnated and I got a lot more injuries. Did a lot of hamstring stuff and, you know, I would always get little hamstring injuries and niggles at the worst possible time before a big competition or something like that. And, you know, I think as an athlete, you got to continue to evolve and change. And I thought I had a great coach at the time. He really brought me to the level I was at. But I needed to have a bit of a change because I wasn't really going anywhere. So I made a move to Arizona with, you know, who Dan Papp, who is regarded as the best coach in the world. So I jumped at the opportunity to be able to train with him. And he kind of opened my eyes to the whole sport, not just jumping, but sprinting and just the way the body moves and stuff like that. I learned a whole lot from him that I actually didn't know. And at that point, I was already like 31, I think, when I moved out there. So I kind of learned all this new stuff, but I was already like kind of like at the peak back into my career, which felt weird, still learning. But the results were really good and I learned a whole lot. And from there, I just actually got better.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, you've had some great results sort of back end of your career. So when we talk about the end of your career, you're not competing anymore. How did you come to the decision to stop competing? Like, obviously, if something that's been such a huge part of your life, I mean, you're literally living, you know, most people's dream of being a professional athlete, traveling the world and doing what you love and getting paid for it. So how hard was it for you to decide to stop? And also, did you know that it was the right time to stop, or did you sort of stop before? Was it anything that forced you to stop before? Was it an injury, or was it more just a feeling of, I think it's time to rest now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a great year in 2015, 16, and, you know, 17 was pretty good too. And then the next big one would have been the 2020 Olympics, which actually didn't even turn out to be the case. So I'm actually glad I retired because otherwise I would have to have an extra year of training now. But no, like, I feel like every athlete knows the moment that comes when you just know that you're not really enjoying it, or you're not really, you don't have the energy to do the training and be at the level that you should be, then I knew it was time to give it up. I don't want to just do it just to do it and just to be average. I want to do it to be able to win still. And I didn't think I was at that level. It takes a lot of hard work and dedication in your life to be able to, you know, go to Olympics and perform at the best of your ability. And I just didn't have that. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to get it done. So I just didn't want to waste my time.
Yeah, that'd be tough. I mean, it's tough to do that. And it's what would be an amazing attitude to think that if I'm not going to be competitive or if I'm not going to be jumping as well as I think I can, then I'm going to stop. So amazing decision. Talk me through, let's get into some more specifics now around your training. So I think, you know, athletics is probably not a sport where a lot of people know what sort of training goes involved. It's not as big, especially in Australia, as other sports where you maybe, you know, you follow the local rugby league players, you know, training regime. But what's an athletic, like what's a long jumper's training look like? Like how much is in the weight room and what sort of stuff would you might do in the weight room? How much is it specific to jumping, like out on the track?
Yeah. I guess it all depends on the time of the year as well. You know, you got your off season, your kind of like pre-season right before the season starts, then you got the during the season. So you got those three kind of periods. Off season's like, you know, the stuff that everyone hates. You do a lot more repetitive, more like not repetitive, just more work on the track and in the gym. A regular day would be like for me, I'll hit the gym probably three times a day as far as lifting goes. A lot of those lifting movements would be stuff like cleans, snatches, a lot of power movements. You know, then you got some upper body stuff like some presses, you know, stuff like, what do you call those ones where you box step ups, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I've been to gym three times a day, week, but then also twice a week in the gym on just your basic general strength exercises. So almost 5 days a week in off season, I'll be in the gym. But more specifically to the like season, a typical week would be like consist of a lot of speed work. So it's very focused. What we do with speed and jumps. So I'd probably run Monday, Wednesday. I'd do like real fast, quick accelerations from zero to about 40 meters. Or anything from zero to 70 meters. And then maybe once a week, I do like what they call speed endurance. And I'd run, you know, do sets of probably six of like anywhere from 100 to 150 meters with short rest. And that was like an endurance type session for me, which probably wouldn't be that hard for most other distance athletes, but for us, it was pretty tough. And then probably two sets a week, I'm jumping or doing run-up approach work as well. And in between all that, we have a lot of little exercises that we do, a lot of like jumps into the pit, like standing long jump, standing triple jump, that kind of stuff, plyometric type stuff.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of ab and core work.
Yeah, cool.
So it was, you know, it was pretty grueling. It was probably two sessions a day. You do track session, which lasts from anywhere from 2 hours, 1.5 to 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then have a little break, have lunch, and then you go to the gym for another 2 hours. And then after that, you probably get a massage or get some treatment. So it's almost like a 9 to 5 in a sense where you're probably out there 6 hours of the day.
Yeah, interesting. So, and what would, how much focus did you have on your nutrition? I mean, you've naturally always been a pretty lean sort of dude, but how much focus would you put onto your nutrition? And is that something you had help with?
Yeah, we had help with it. Like we had recommendations from, you know, the nutritionist of what we should be eating and how and what time and stuff like that. You know, I wasn't probably the best when it came to that stuff. I did what I, as best as I could, but I still liked to eat what I wanted to eat. And I was also pretty lucky that I didn't really gain much weight or anything like that. I was actually the opposite. If I didn't train or do anything, I'd actually lose weight. I don't know how that makes any sense, but that's what would normally happen with me.
Cool. Really, really cool. So I've got a few more questions here that we've had sent in that I'm just going to rattle off and get your answers on. A lot of it's around sort of recovery. A lot of it's around also during the event, which we haven't touched on. This is an interesting one. So long jumpers seem to have like a super long run-up. What determines the length of a run-up for a long jumper? Is it some guys have a shorter run-up, some guys have a longer run-up. Like what is it when you're in training with your coach, how would you guys decide on how long your run-up's going to be?
Generally, most jumpers, well, professionally, would have a run-up of anywhere from 18 to 20 steps. Obviously, some runners have longer steps and some have shorter steps, but it's pretty basic stuff. It's generally anywhere from 18 to 20, honestly. And some people might have a bit of a walk-in, which might make it look longer than it is. But, yeah, generally, everyone's 18 to 20 steps.
Is that because that's how long it takes you sort of get to peak speed? Is that sort of what that's based off?
Yeah, so ideally, you don't want to go to 0 to 60 in like as quick as... I mean, you want to go fast, but you don't want to just go flat out fast. It's more of a building into it type of thing. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're going slow at the start, but like you're just really generating a lot of power and pushing into the ground at the start. And the goal is obviously to be at max speed right at the board and not halfway down the track.
Yeah. All right, cool. So specific question to you, pretty famous for those watch that you always had your gold chain around your neck and you always specifically had it in your mouth actually when you were jumping.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Is that just a thing you did one day and you kept doing it because you jumped well and it was like a lucky thing, or is there a reason behind it?
Yeah, it's just something I always did, and I guess people made a big deal, made a deal about it, but it was just something I always did. It's just like, I guess it's like a tick that I had that I always used to put in my mouth. So yeah, but as my career went on, I just felt like naked if I didn't have it there.
Yeah.
Like a food or something. Like I needed it there. It's a comfort thing. I had to have it there.
That's cool. I mean, athletes are weird people, man. In my experience, a lot of athletes I know are strange. So it doesn't surprise me that it's no real reason behind that. What about, so this is like a more around the sport of long jump. Why did you, or what do you think about the I mean, those who don't know, long jump is measured from the front of like the board, essentially. So you can jump wherever you want from behind, but they're going to measure the jump from the board. And if you go over the board, it's a foul. What do you think about the idea of having like a big board, like a really wide board? You can jump from wherever you want within that board and they're going to measure from the front of your foot. And therefore, fouls are pretty much not going to happen.
I back that idea 100%. I don't think everyone would agree with me on that, but I'd back it. I was actually one of those athletes that fouled quite a lot and fouled a lot of long jumps, which, you know, could have probably got a lot more medals in my career had it not been for those fouls. But yeah, I'd back it. I love that idea, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you did foul a lot. So let's just talk about that real quick. So I've watched you a few times and like even just not even in the final yet. So you're in the heats, you know, you've got to qualify for the final and it's three jumps and you might have fouled twice in a row. And if you foul again, basically you're out. What's your mentality going into that third jump, knowing that if you foul, you're out? Or if you, like, did you have the idea of maybe pulling back a little bit and just getting a jump on the board, knowing that if you just landed a jump, you're likely to qualify? Or what was your mentality? Was it always going, nah, I'm going 100%, I'm going to jump as big as
I can? No, it's... Honestly, I think qualifying rounds in a major competition is the hardest thing anyone can do. It's honestly the hardest thing. You get three jumps to make the championship final the next day, but it's the hardest thing you do. Like, it's just it sounds so easy just to go easy and jump just to make the final, but it's not that easy. Like, the thing is, you go out there and you foul the first jump, right? Now you're in trouble. You only got two chances left. And you take it easy the second jump, but it's not quite far enough, which now leaves you with one jump and you can't mess that one up. And that just puts a lot of pressure on you. So, you know, it was hard to navigate that. Luckily, most of the time I did make finals, but there are other times where I didn't. My strategy would be to just try and take it a little easy the first jump, but try and get on the board. But if you don't get on the board the first jump, that's... when the pressure sets in and you're in trouble. But yeah, as far as the finals go, a lot of times you'd be in trouble and you'd have two fouls, something like that. Honestly, it was almost like a game Russian roulette. You'd have to do it. You'd have to go all out in the third one.
Yeah.
And put up. It's either you do it or you don't do it, but you couldn't hold back.
Yeah, and I guess that's maybe why some people like the idea of having the board and having it small so that you know, so there is that pressure, because if obviously if you didn't have that worry, it wouldn't, you know, that element of it would never come into it. So I get the for and against for that rule. What about, talk me about technology. So obviously the world has evolved in the last sort of 18 years that you've been doing long jump. Did you see anything come into it? Any piece of equipment in training, or any sort of outfits you could wear, or did you sort of do any sort of different biomechanical analysis, or did anything sort of happen as you evolved through your career that was different to when it started that you think sort of aided your performance, or was that something you sort of never had much experience with?
Yeah, no, there was a few things. There was a thing where like they'd measure your speed and stride length down the runway. So like from the very start of the run all the way to hitting the board, they measure the velocity of your run, where your max speed, how long your strides were, and all that kind of stuff, which helped a lot because you were able to tell exactly where you are on a runway and where you can fix things.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
What about competition? You turn up and it's raining, or you turn up and it's really cold, and the conditions aren't ideal for jumping. Would that mean a change in preparation on the day, or would that mean a different strategy on the runway? Like, how would you adjust based on the weather?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things when I was younger, I hated the rain or cold. Like, there were times even when I was probably in high school, like, if it rained outside, I wouldn't go training. I'm not going. But now, as a professional, like, I had rain and cold so many times that my biggest thing was I'd lock it out. This might sound dumb, but like I would actually think I was in the sun. I'd imagine I was at a beach somewhere. I honestly did. Like, there are times when I was in like 10 degree weather, but like literally in my mind I was thinking I'm at a beach and it's hot outside. And I think that actually helped. It might sound dumb, but it actually did help.
I like that because I think sometimes people think, you know, pro athletes have some special magic secret to deal with, you know, things that are different, and reality is just imagine different weather. That's
yeah, 100%. It was freezing out there, but I just tried to act like it was hot. So
what about, I mean, long jump is pretty like one dimensional, like you run up and you jump, so it's pretty much the same thing over and over again. How did you throughout your career maintain interest in training? Did you do different things? Like, is there anything you did different in your training to not make sure you didn't get bored with doing the same thing over and over again?
I think in that aspect, it really is important to have the people around you, training partners. If you're just doing it by yourself, it'd be pretty boring. But I found that half the battle was having a really good group of friends or training partners around you to make training more fun. And I found that especially for me, like those years where I didn't do so well from 2010 to 14, like the training partners I had actually stopped doing a sport, and I was actually more by myself. And that might be a correlation to why I wasn't enjoying training as much. And again, when I moved to Phoenix, we had a great bunch of group of people to train with. And I think it's just all about the people you train with and helping them motivate each other to train better.
Cool. What about motivation? Like, how did you stay motivated for such a long time? Like, you had a long career and you performed pretty much throughout the whole time. So how did you stay motivated? Like, what was your motivation? Was your motivation the fact that you wanted to go to the Olympics? Was it, I mean, you went to the Olympics, but then you have to continue to stay motivated. Was it always to try and win the next competition? Was there a specific event that you were always aiming at? Or was it just the fact that you just loved long jump and loved being an athlete, so therefore that kept you motivated? Like, how did you keep your motivation for so long?
Yeah, so for me, I was motivated just to win every medal that I could win at every championship. So obviously, I had never won a world championship outdoor title before, or medal. I had never won an Olympic medal. And I wanted to go out there and get that. So that's what motivated me. And, you know, I was able to get that world championship medal in 2015. And, you know, I was one of the favorites for the Olympics in 2016. Which didn't turn out in my favor, but that's what motivated me to keep going, just to get the medals that I never got before.
And did you find that sometimes you got a, like, I mean, you're a human being, right? So some days you would have woke up for sure and sort of not felt like training. Is it, Is that something that you kept in mind on those days, or were you sort of okay with saying, yeah, oh, I don't feel like it today?
I think if you wake up one day and you like, because it's pretty grueling, like as a professional, you do a lot of training and, you know, and you need a lot of recovery and stuff. So if you wake up one day and you literally weren't feeling it, you just don't get training. There's no point going to training if you're going to half-ass it and not get the job done. So there are days where you just literally just don't go and have a rest at home.
That's good. No, that's good. That's a good take on it. I like that. I think we've got two more questions and then we'll wrap it up. Sorry to be jumping around a little bit here. What about, did you ever use things like, we've spoken about a little bit about how you sort of got in the zone and you sort of blocked everything else out when you're on the runway. Did you ever use any sort of visualization or mental rehearsal techniques in your training to sort of, you know, maybe the night before the event or, you know, days leading into a big event, like seeing yourself jump well, seeing yourself win, seeing the crowd cheering? Is that sort of a thing you ever did? And how did you sort of use that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think that's, for me, that's constant. Constant. Every day I was visualizing. Every day. Probably multiple times in an hour, all the time. I was constantly visualizing. Walking down the street, I'm pretending there's a long jump board down like the cracks of the street. Driving, so the answer to that is basically always constantly visualizing.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's sick. Dude, I watched you once at a wedding jump over a group of people. So I imagine, you know, visualization came into it on that moment. I visualized you falling over actually, and it didn't happen. You stuck pretty well. So,
like, yeah. No, I think it's key. Like, I know what I'm going to do before I do it.
Yeah.
So I'm already ahead. So, but yeah, I remember that. I remember that moment, jumping that girl after wedding. That was pretty funny. But yeah.
And final question, who was, in your career, who was the one person that you always found it challenging to compete against? Or if you saw, or if you knew was at the meet, you knew it was going to be like a tough day, like you'd have to be your absolute best to get the win. Like, who was the best jumper consistently that you sort of competed against?
Yeah, so for me, coming out of college and starting professional, Dwight Phillips was like the man. He was like the reigning Olympic champion, world champion. He ended up winning 5 world championships in his career. And yeah, he was a guy. Like, he was a guy to beat. So whenever he was out there, it was an exciting moment because, like, you know, you get to compete against the best in the world and try your best against him. But I was very fortunate that I actually beat him on multiple occasions, which not many people can say they did. I beat him to a World Athletics final title.
Awesome.
In 2009 when he won the World Championships. So that was pretty cool. I beat him a few times in Diamond League as well, which was pretty nice. But yeah, he was probably the main man.
Awesome. Fab, thanks so much for hanging out. Like, I feel like there's a ton of questions and a ton of different stories that I'd like to hear, but we'll leave it there for today. Really, really appreciate your time. I know everyone listening here is very grateful that you gave up your time and spoke with us today. So thanks for being so open, so honest, and yeah, hope you enjoy retirement, man. I heard you recently got on a live performance of The Bachelor, so
yeah, that was good times. Mate, no, I'm loving it. Another retirement life.
All right, thanks, Fab. Take care of yourself, mate.
All right, have a good one. See ya.